With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
We are smack dab in the middle of the NHL draft and the NHL's free agent window. It's an exciting time to be a fan of the Maple Leafs, and it's also an exciting time to be hosting a Maple Leafs podcast. We got a lot to chat about, Mike, but first, what's going on?
Not too much, man. It's been a while since we've done podcast stuff, which is fun. I'm surprised the draft, we're recording this on Thursday today. And I'm surprised the draft was over by the time we were able to hit record. That was the longest experience in my entire life.
I was a little concerned that the Maple Leafs were going to trade back into the seventh round second time and just completely ruin my night. That was, already very interrupted by the longest draft in history. Shout out to Adnan Verk, Yahoo Sports employee.
Yeah.
For sticking it through that was a lengthy broadcast. Didn't have to be that way, but it was for whatever reason.
No, it was absolutely insane. Like at one point, Sportsnet cut away it freaked me out because at one point in like the fourth round, Sportsnet had to cut away because they had to air an MLB playoff game and everyone was freaking out. But yeah, it was just insane. It was six and a half hours. I thought, it would be great. I'll get some writing done. The draft will be over and then I can kind of launch into something. Nope. Didn't work out that way, but, here we are. It was an exciting rip roaring kind of day. And, it's a lot of fun to talk about.
And it was so weird because they actually like stopped for commercial breaks. Like why?
I don't get
that at all. Like they would actually take 3 minutes off
to cater to
commercial breaks. Like this was round one of the NFL draft and you needed like all the pomp and circumstance imaginable when there wasn't anything but, three guys on a panel talking about each pick and doing the best they could. I think they did a hell of a job, but it didn't really make sense to actually stop the draft for commercial breaks.
No, absolutely not. It was insane. And why do you need 5 minutes in between every pick from, I would say, the third round on? Like, if you're really – I know that they eventually start to roll in, but some teams were taking the entire allotment of time for, like, the 170th pick or something. I'm like, guys, come on. Like, at this point, if you don't know who you're picking in these kind of spots, then you haven't done your homework. Like, you need – this is – it's ridiculous. And to the point, like, there's that very famous picture of Nikola Jokic getting drafted in, like, 45th overall in the second round of the NBA draft during a commercial break for the Taco Bell Quesarito that was just released. And think about how awesome it would be if they just kept going but had that little ticker at the bottom. And so the next potential, Jamie Benn was drafted in the fifth round. All these – there's so many – Pavel Datsyuk was, like, a sixth or seventh round pick. Imagine how cool we would have those little images be of, I don't know, the next Detroit Red Wings star, the next Tampa Bay Lightning star getting drafted while a commercial for Hot and Ready Delivery from Little Caesars is playing. Like it would have been great, but instead we had to wait and wait and wait, and finally at about midnight everything was over.
And after midnight, the Leafs were left with 12 selections in the 2020 draft. They entered with 11 picks. They did some trading up. They did some trading down. They traded back into the seventh round, as I mentioned earlier. They made 12 selections, and they had some pretty clear strategy. I mean, they started off the draft with only, or pretty much exclusively, taking players that haven't had their seasons impacted by COVID-19. Mm-hmm. That means guys from Russia. That meant guys from Finland. And then they opened it up a little bit in the latter stages. I think they had six or seven picks in the last two rounds, and they started going off the board a little bit and taking guys that might have, really high upside or just potential lottery tickets. But we're going to focus on the guys who were taken in the first four or five rounds. because I think that's who, you know, obviously, I mean, Kyle Dubas basically said that they are just home run swinging when they get to the draft floor. That's all they're trying to do. So there could be a guy in the sixth round who makes, you know, an impact with the Leafs, but we're going to focus on the first four, five, six selections, I guess, from those first few rounds. And it starts with the number one overall selection, the end or the final piece of the return for Kasperi Kapanen. Mm-hmm. And they spent that 15th overall pick on Rodion Amarov. Any hot takes on Amarov? Have you seen even a shift of Amarov before, I guess it was Tuesday night's draft?
Not before, but after he was drafted, the number one clip that was circulating around the internet was him pulling off the Michigan move. Yes. And if anyone can, and I'm a fan of anyone who can pull off the Michigan move. Great for him. No, I really like this pick. It's weird that the Leafs have essentially doubled down and tripled down and quadrupled down and quintupled down, et cetera, on Dan Milstein clients, because this is another Dan Milstein client. And then they picked another Dan Milstein client after this. And before. It's crazy. But I was watching the draft with former New Jersey staffer, Rachel Dory. She's worked in front offices. She's a scout. And she was over the moon about this pick. The fact that this guy was still here, he was a top 10 talent, kind of, they said. And he has a lot of comparables to Kucherov, which is like, he's a dynamic guy. He's got a great shot. And look, he's playing in the KHL this year, and the KHL is notoriously, like, everyone was pointing at specifically Carlo Koliakovo, we'll have to just name names here, was pointing at his stat line of the 2 points, and I think it was 27 games or something last year, being like, really? We're going to draft whatever? First of all, teenagers in the KHL, they barely ever play at all, and when they do, they're on the fourth line, and they get, like, one shift, so those are really misleading stat lines. And also, this guy, he's still a teenager, he's 19, and he already has 5 points in 10 games as a teenager in the KHL. He's clearly making a move, and he's playing against professional players in what is probably the second best league in the world. I'm really high on this pick. I love it. I really wanted Seth Jarvis. He was taken by, and it was a running joke throughout the rest of the day that the Hurricanes were essentially just, because they were always picking like two spots ahead of the Leafs, they were always going to just snag whoever the Leafs wanted right before. And they did that with the pick that was the Leafs for Patrick Marleau. So when Seth Jarvis turns into a star, we're all going to be able to you know, bemoan that. But I think Amarov was a great pick that they were able to get that fell. And look, his contract as well expires at the end of 2021, which means that him coming over sooner is a bit more of a possibility. And the fact that he's been playing against grown men so long might actually mean that he's able and capable to play at a professional level earlier than maybe another draft prospect would be from, you know, the OHL or someone like that. So yeah, I'm really high on this pick. I think he fits a timeline really well. I think he fits a like what they need offensively. And if he can even come close to his comparable of Kucherov, then man, sign me up.
Yeah, I think like 10 years ago, I probably would have seen this exactly like Koliakovo, and that's not meant to be a slight against Koliakovo.
But it's not, I think, 10 years ago. It's
exactly
today.
I mean, the absence of eye-catching numbers, I think it does, you know, affect the fan in a certain way. And that's, you know, that's not an extraordinary thing, obviously, to have only two assists in a single season. But this is also a player who doesn't have single extraordinary attributes. This is just a solid offensive player who they believe can grow into something much more than he really is. Now, that's a bit of a gamble at number 15, because there's obviously some players that maybe were more, you knew exactly where they were heading with their career. It might not have the ceiling as Amarov, but you at least know a little bit more of what you're getting. But I think the Leafs have confidence in their process, and it goes all the way, like, this is what they do. They have this identity, they have this foundation, this talent base that they want to just continue feeding and feeding and feeding. This is the type of player that they want, and I don't think they thought twice about taking him because he was highest on their board. I do think it makes sense that it seems like they were waiting till the last possible second. In fact, they did, to actually make that selection, because Gary Bettman came on, and I thought they were actually going to take the pick from them because they hadn't submitted their draft selection yet. But this was not a guy that everybody else was eager to take, it seemed. And that's okay. But it also feeds into this sort of complex that Leaf fans have right now in their criticism and skepticism over Kyle Dubas's process. But they are who they are, and they are comfortable with who they are. And Amarov fits their process. And for that reason, you just have to trust that this is a player that's eventually in 2, 3, or as soon as the end of 2021 is going to be a player that contributes to the top six and be as a guy that can help replenish what they are building, which is a team that is based solely on talent first.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think them trying to trade the pick and then end up just taking their guy anyway. I mean, they liked him. They had an idea of who they wanted and they took him. And the consensus was that essentially he was the best player available at that spot. I mean, that's the thing. Like, there's so many people who want to say that, you know, you can draft for a need. And a lot of people forget the draft. Like, you're not going to get a player of immediate impact at 15th overall, maybe at 1 and 2, maybe. But how many times have we seen a third overall pick jump into the NHL, you know, and third overall pick and down jump right into the NHL? You're not. So you take a guy who you really love. They clearly had some great insight on him. They're very tight with his agent, and they have one of the best international scouts in Jim Pagliafito who has seen this guy. And as well, he's playing games right now. You're able to have that instant reaction and realize, oh, he's and chart his trajectory in real time before this. This is a very unique experience in any draft, and they got him, and I like it. I thought it was a really good pick, and ignoring what they needed, I mean, just take the best player available, and it seemed like he was.
Speaking of Milstein, he is so ingrained, it seems, with what the Leafs are doing right now. I had someone message me or DM me saying that he's going to be named their assistant GM next week, and I completely bought that idea, because I thought, well, clearly, like, there's something going on here. Like, they are so – the working partnership is there, mm-hmm. and I mean, if they're able to get, you know, all these picks to come and all these free agents to come and maybe Ilya Mikheyev on a shortened deal, why not give Dan Milstein a little bit of scratch? I think he deserves it for being basically the guy who's, you know, set up this pipeline from Russia to the Maple Leafs. It is interesting how that has all worked out. Now, the second pick for the Leafs was a Finnish forward, Roni Hirvonen, second round, 59th overall. This got everyone going because, you know,
he's tiny.
It's another small, skilled forward. 16 points in 52 games last year, obviously playing in Finland's top division. Another guy who's going to be playing and seems to have a good start to his year already. But yeah, it got, you know, who we were talking about before, all these guys and all these fans who really want the Leafs to open their eyes to different things. But this was basically a slap in the face to those people because yep. This was doubling down on the Amarov pick with another player who's considered a skill first guy that has, you know, maybe middle six potential and is going to take a while to get here, but it's a guy who has a significant talent base to which to work from.
Yeah. You see, this was the leafiest pick of all time. This was exactly who they want. He's also very, very cool. What's it called? Story of how he found out he was drafted is that he was playing while he got drafted for Liga, and they showed it on I think it was in the third period at a stoppage in play. They showed it on the Jumbotron in the middle of this game that, oh, Hirvonen just got drafted by the Leafs, and that's how he found out.
That's
very cool. A lot of people had him as like a borderline top, like first round pick, like a guy who was, I mean, Scott Wheeler, for example, had him at 30 on his final draft board, and they were able to get him at 59th overall. I'm a little worried that he's projected as, I mean, you're not going to get like first round guys or whatever. I get it. In the second round, like everyone has to hold their, you know, hold their expectations on these guys. But talking about like a middle six guy, that worries me a little bit. But the Leafs, again, they have they have one of the best developmental systems in the entire NHL. I mean, we've seen it, covering the Marley specifically, I've seen it firsthand where just the attention to detail and the amount of resources and the amount of coaches specifically that you have to work with these guys is immense. So when we see an initial draft report from these guys, we can't just take it at face value. We have to kind of see it how he's going to project. But yeah, I think he's a fine pick. Like he's a skilled center. I don't care about the size again. He, like, you know, everyone, all your uncle seems to love Mitch Marner a lot and he's tiny. So this guy seems to be a great playmaker. He's producing pretty well in a, you know, in a men's league again. And they're picking these guys, as much as it might be a COVID thing, a COVID centric thing, they're picking these guys who are playing against grown men from a very young age. And although it's on a different size ice surface, that changes your development. That changes how ready you are to come over here. It's different when you're 18 and you're playing against, you know, 29, 30 year olds and you're facing 29, 30 year old body checks and 29, 30 year old decision-making, regardless of, you know, yeah, regardless of, I guess, the actual skill set of the game, it makes you more ready to come over to a professional organization like the Leafs and play a professional game potentially for the Marlies first before you go up than it would be when you're playing against a 16-year-old in Flint. So it's completely different. And I think that the fact that they're getting these guys who are producing well this young in European leagues, and they're playing right now, and they're able, and they're not getting impacted by any of these stoppages, that's great. And Hirvonen, with all of his skills, with all of his playmaking, I mean, he's listed as an elite guy on the half wall on the power play. Yeah, I think it's a great deal and to get, or a great pick, and to get him at 59th overall when, you know, some of the most, I would say, vaunted scouts and get people who actually really pay attention to this instead of us, who just kind of dip in every once in a while around draft time, having him ranked at the end of the first round and getting him at 59th overall, that's incredible value. So they definitely maximize that. I'm a fan.
Yeah, Hirvonen, like Amrov and like Nick Robertson before him, this is a player, as I've read, because I haven't seen much of Ronnie Hirvonen, but he doesn't rely on a single asset and has a lot of dimensions to his game. And I think what they're trying to do is draft those quality forwards who have a little bit more development ahead of them. And Nick Robertson is the perfect example of that, because he was of the same sort of, or cut from the same cloth, I guess, as these two. And then he responded the next season by leading the Ontario Hockey League in goals. I think they're going after guys who have a little bit more development to ahead of them. Mm-hmm. And I think because they play in Europe, that development maybe is a little bit behind. They don't have those eye-catching numbers. They're not the most important players on their team, but they're growing into that role. So I think that gives them a chance to actually do it. That's their sort of market efficiency. They're going after guys who might be a little bit underrated because they don't have those eye-catching numbers, because they don't have the role just yet. As I mentioned, Hirvonen, haven't seen any of him, but haven't seen any of Topi Niemelä yet, the third round 64th overall selection, a defenseman. But I think this might be my favorite pick from just what I've read. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Leafs gushed about him, saying he has maybe the best defensive sense in the draft among defensemen. And he's a guy that sounds exactly like a right-handed Rasmus Sandin. They say he thinks the game better than most of the players in his class, and he has the mobility and takes care of the puck really, really well. Obviously, he fits an organizational need as a right shot project with the Maple Leafs. This is one of the selections that got rave reviews from analysts afterwards.
And think about how much better the Leafs defense would look if Rasmus Sandin shot right-handed. Think about how many problems that would solve. So if this guy can turn into something like that, man, Bob's your uncle. That's fantastic. You were in the Zoom call at the end of the draft. So yeah, you like this is that's your interpretation, is that the Leafs were gushing about this guy potentially more than any other pick.
This is one. I mean, they were really high on Amarov, but they spoke about Amarov after the first round. They did two different Zoom sessions. But the strongest sort of endorsement from John Lilly, who I believe is the director of amateur scouting. Yeah. I might have to check that, but. This was the guy that seemed to make him light up the most, if that means anything at all.
Well, yeah. I mean, clearly, if the guy who makes the picks is that high on him, then absolutely. And again, another guy who was kind of tabbed in the borderline first round, second round. I mean, Scott Wheeler, I'm pretty sure, had him at 33rd on his, on his final board.
I'm convinced Scott Wheeler's got, he's bugged the Maple Leafs war room, because basically everyone that he wrote about, even outside the 100, was eventually taken by the Maple Leafs.
Yeah, well, I mean, eventually, if you write about enough players, they pick 12 guys. So, I mean, like, how many you're going to be batting a certain.
Trying to give him a little credit.
Exactly. Yeah. Good for you. I mean, he's he knows everything about it. He's the amount of Topi Niemelä tape that this guy has probably chewed is ridiculous. It's more than any of us have done for the NHL team, but. Yeah, no, he's a right shot defenseman. That's that already I was sold on that when I heard it. And look, he's putting up decent numbers in a league against grown men. Another sort of trend here with the Leafs. They clearly have certain players that they want. They have this, and look, if you're going to, I'd much rather, I know there's a lot of thoughts here. The criticism of the Leafs is that they have their sort of idea of a player and they want to draft them and they don't kind of look for, size or whatever. But you know what? If you're going to go down with the ship, go down with the ship in the way that you want it to be. They clearly have what they think is the their ideal archetype for a player. And they've really doubled down and tripled down on these guys. And it seems to, look, the early return seems to be working. Niemela is a new age kind of defenseman. He's able to defend the rush. He's able to break up transition. And he's also able to push the play. And he's a right shot defenseman. Like, there you go. Boom. I think that this is going to max – the fact that they have the infrastructure built on the Marley, specifically with all these European guys, is really going to be maximized because they don't have to worry about any right, you know, any agreements with the CHL or whatever where they have to stay in junior for a year or two. You bring these guys over, you integrate them into the organization right away, and as much as these are sort of longer-term projects, they can hit the ground running quicker than maybe other longer-term projects could.
Yeah, you mentioned going down with the ship. I don't even think it's going down with the ship. I think it's just that they just want to get as many good hockey players into the system as possible. And I think they believe that this is the quickest route to getting contributors, to identifying these certain talents and traits and attributes that are going to translate to the next level. That doesn't mean they're going to, you know, have their team just chock full of their own draft picks who are basically clones of each other. They're not clones of each other, but they're very similar players. But what they're doing is assembling commodities. Once you assemble commodities, you can go out and you can, you know, develop them into, you can develop other skills, but you can also trade them and get different sort of different, you know, guys who can do other things that can help you in different ways. But you can also go out in the free agency and get different, you know, utility that way as well. So if you're just focused on getting good players and adding them to your system, then you're building up your commodity base, and then you can use those commodities to fill out your team and trade to other teams to get what you need. So I think that's exactly what they're doing here. They're not trying to find a guy who's going to play, you know, on their fourth line right wing in the fifth round, because the odds of identifying that guy at 18 years old is very slim. So let someone else develop that player and then trade for him once you've developed good, like an assembly line of good players that fit the same mold. I think that's exactly what they're trying to do. They're not trying to be one-dimensional. They're just trying to get as many good players into their system as possible.
Yeah, you know the saying, you know, shoot for the stars, and even if you miss, you might land on a cloud. Like, that's essentially what they're doing. Because if you Frédéric Gauthier, for example, they drafted for need there. They drafted this guy to be their third-line center. And he never hit that ceiling, and he was their fourth line center and was a sort of a borderline guy. By taking these home run swings, by drafting these guys who you hope can be, you know, top line performers, and, you know, not all of them are going to hit their ceilings. That's just the way the draft works. But, you know, so not all of them are going to, you know, shoot for the stars, but they might land on the cloud. If you draft a guy, let's say Rodion Amarov, that, you know, they think he can be a first line scoring winger. Yes, he doesn't hit that. He ends up being a second line scoring winger. Well, that's fine. Great. You got a second line scoring winger out of it. That's great. Or Niemela, you know, he's a projected, you know, top four, maybe even top two defenseman, you know, if everything, you know, shakes out right. But if he doesn't hit that, great. Then you got a top four defenseman or even a, you know, really solid bottom six guy, so, or a bottom pairing guy. So I like that they're taking these swings. And it's not, and when I said going down with the ship, I didn't mean that they're going to be going down with the ship. I meant, like, even if this doesn't work, you might as well go out on your own terms. And they have exactly the archetype that they want. And they seem to be doubling down on that. And it's worked out pretty well for them so far. Whether they've used these players in roles that are helping the team right now. You know, again, a guy like Nick Robertson, for example, just is a testament to that. Rasmus Andin, testament to that. Or these guys haven't necessarily worked out, but they're good enough, they're able to use them as chips for trades. The whole reason why they were able to draft Rodion Amarov is because a guy who they drafted with, or the guy who they, I guess, acquired, but didn't draft, but acquired in Kasperi Kapanen, he got them that. So he got them that pick, and he didn't work out, but he fit that mold of what they wanted a player to be. So yeah, a lot of these guys aren't going to be Maple Leafs, at least long-term. A lot of these guys won't even make the Maple Leafs at any point in their careers, but they bring to the table what the Leafs want, and that gives them a better shot than any, and it gives them a better shot of contributing to the organization through either their standing as an asset or as their standing as a player.
Kapanen is a perfect example because this is a player that obviously has plus attributes and some extraordinary talents that jump right off the page. It made him a first round draft selection of the Pittsburgh Penguins, and it made him the key return asset in the Phil Kessel deal. But his upside wasn't completely fulfilled. At least it wasn't with the Leafs. He hit a ceiling as a third line right winger. And that's as far as he was going to go with the Maple Leafs, but his skill set meant more to another team. They were able to use that asset to trade back into the first round to get Rodion Amarov and we'll see what happens with Amirov, obviously. More upside they're looking for was with their fourth selection. It was of the fourth round as well, 106th overall, Artur Akhtemov. Not sure if I'm saying that right, but he's a goaltender. He might not be Yaroslav Askarov, but it is a Russian goaltending prospect with strong numbers playing in the top levels of his native country. This isn't the biggest goaltender, so it sort of fills the Maple Leafs draft narrative, which is they're drafting undersized contributors. But it's been a while since the Leafs have had an elite goaltending prospect in the system. They might not have that yet, but maybe this is a guy who can grow into that with a couple more seasons of seasoning in Russia.
I really like this guy. I mean, he's not playing in the KHL right now. He's in the MHL, which is their version of the AHL. A lot of HLs going on here. But he
better that he is, because he's getting playing time rather than sitting behind a veteran.
Exactly. And what he's doing with that playing time is pretty friggin' fantastic. He had a 931 last year in 46 games. And this year, if I am not mistaken, let me just pull up his elite prospects who have just been, you know, carrying this draft. This year in three games in the MHL, he's got a 926. And in four games in the VHL, I'm assuming that they're just, you know, alternating between these leagues, he's got a 957. So this guy has never posted a save percentage below 921 in any of the seasons that he's listed as playing like reputable hockey on elite prospects. Like this guy has just hit with production. And I've seen a little bit of how he plays. He seems like he's got a decent positional awareness. He's able to make some pretty, you know, difficult saves. But goaltending is such voodoo, but I love taking a swing on this guy. A lot of people say that this is kind of a right around where he was expected to get picked. And look, again, he's playing, eventually he will play in the KHL. And I think he's also a Milstein client, so he's got that familiarity there too, which hopefully will help.
We are Gold Star.
Exactly. We are Gold Star. New assistant GM, or new, I guess, mayor of Toronto. I don't know. He's coming
up. Whatever he wants. Whatever
exactly. He wants. Seriously, whatever he wants, apparently. But he's just, yeah, like you said, the Leafs don't have an elite goaltending prospect in their system. The closest thing to that would be Joseph Woll, and he had a pretty rough first year in the AHL. Again, goaltending development isn't linear, so he might, you know, if there is an AHL season next year, he might come out and absolutely dominate. But they do need to stack their sort of ranks with these guys. Ian Scott, who had a great season the year before in the WHL, again playing against teenagers, missed all of last season with a hip injury, and Frederik Andersen, he's going out soon. You know, he's probably, if by miracle he is, or if by any chance he's the starter for this year, he's definitely not going to be the starter for the season after. And Jack Campbell, yes, he's great, but he's not a young prospect. He's 29, he's, or 28, 29. So it's, they need to start filling their ranks with goaltenders. And from everything I've read about this guy, from everything I've, the small sort of sample that I've seen from this guy, and even just looking at his production at these pretty difficult levels in his native country, he's performed pretty well. So good on him, man. Like, who knows what this guy could turn out to be.
I don't want to be the bearer of bad news, but Kyle Dubas did say on both his availabilities that Frederik Andersen will be the starter for opening.
Yeah, but what else is he going to say? What else is he going to say? Is he going to just say, nah, Freddie's gone? That'll really help in both the locker room and in trade negotiations. Like, what else?
Yeah, you know, it's possible, but he did say it sort of without prompting. Too. I mean, they were talking about what they were going to do, and he's like, we feel comfortable in goal. We feel comfortable up front. Obviously, what we're looking for is this and this. So,
and
you know, it's possible.
It's
possible, obviously, that, you know, something changes, but Kyle Dubas has at least shown his hand when something was going to happen. I could go back to Nazem Kadri, where he didn't want to say for certain if Kadri was back. And within 2 or 3 weeks, he was traded after that second loss to Boston. So it looks like Freddie Anderson's probably going to be the starter, but, you know, we'll save that for another discussion. Mm-hmm. I think we're done with breaking down the individual prospects.
Yeah,
so let's reflect on the entire draft.
Sure.
Are we happy with the Leafs draft day performance? I usually don't like to make any grand judgments on what a team managed to do. Because we don't know much about these prospects and what's going to happen. Obviously, they have a clear agenda at drafts and what they're looking for with their prospects. And I commend them for that, because it is, you have to stick with what you're doing. And if you listen to the outside world and what they're telling you to do, you're probably going to make the mistakes because you are invested in something and you shouldn't deviate from that. So I'm not going to knock them for that. they did manage to trade down and get some extra picks and still make what we believe the picks are that they wanted to make. But I guess they didn't completely extract all the value they could out of that number 15 selection, because it looks like they were trying to trade down because they wanted Amarov anyway. But, you know, I guess the biggest criticism would be, why didn't you use that pick to help you right now? Because clearly they need a lot of help. And that was probably their biggest asset or their biggest trade chip when looking at trying to improve the roster right now. Now it's easy to, you know, criticize them for that, but maybe the deal just wasn't there. I mean, you're going to criticize them even more if they make a deal that's bad with the number 15 pick. Mm-hmm. So I'm finding it difficult to actually criticize them for anything they did. Was it a perfect draft? Probably not. Could there be, maybe there were some opportunities lost perhaps, but I think you have to be pretty satisfied that this is a team that knows what it wants, goes out and gets it, and didn't really make a laughable error, because more often than not, we can detect errors immediately, but we can't detect wins immediately. And I don't think they made a huge error on draft day.
The bar was set so low later in the round that any team who drafted someone who the analysts on Sportsnet knew, at least in the first round, knew of, that was because the Chinnikov, that I want to replay that, the reaction to the Chinnikov pick over and over and over. It was hilarious. The amount of paper rustling was nuts. But we have to also think that the climate and the sort of foundation of this draft was totally different. You're in a flat cap world. This is also being deemed the deepest draft in recent memory. There is, you know, first round talent littered all throughout, you know, the later rounds, and or first round talent in any other drafts from a comparable perspective. And as well, with the flat cap, draft picks, specifically potential contributors who could produce one day on ELC contracts at an ELC price, those are incredibly valuable. So you take the value of the draft itself and then the economic value as well. And that first round pick is so valuable. So unless at least we're getting exactly the player that they needed to slot into their defense and help them right away, they weren't going to trade the 15th overall pick for nothing. They weren't going to trade the 15th overall pick for, you know, a Kasperi Kapanen type like the Penguins did, which I still cannot believe they actually did in the first place. So I think holding on to that pick, and look, if they weren't able to trade down, they weren't able to trade down. But a lot of people listed Amarov as, you know, one of the best players left available. The Leafs might have thought they could get him later, but they seem to just maximize that. And I'm really high on him. I love the comparables to Kucherov. I know he might not actually hit that, but look, he's signed to the same agency that seems to have a really good relationship with this organization. He's performing really well against grown men, which has accelerated his development. And he's playing in a league that isn't going to get interrupted by anything, or that will be able to have, you know, physical contact this year. So his development will not get stagnated. And the Leafs have a recent sample size to draw on as well when they're drafting him. So I think that, look, at least in the first, as the first round goes, they did a great job. Moving forward, I mean, everything else becomes sort of more of a lottery. But again, like you said, they have their template of guys that they want. And especially in those middle rounds of second and the second and third round, they seem to really get a ton of value out of those picks that they might have, you know, if every team had kind of listened to a lot of these scouts, would have gone, you know, right at the end of the first round, early second. So I think they did a great job. And there was, it seemed like the trade market was pretty, as that one agent, I think, said to Pierre LeBrun, constipated, the trade market clearly was blocked up. And so you weren't going to find that fit. And even the trades that did happen, two of them were huge swings and misses for teams that seemed to be moving out the most valuable asset. So I think that they did a great job with exactly what they had. And they'll be able to sort of add and pack in those sort of ancillary spots on the roster in free agency, because a lot of people aren't getting qualified. And there are so many deep, like really high quality players who are young now who are out on the free agent market that they could really target. I think it was great. And I think that the idea that anyone they would have picked in this draft was going to help their roster right away, it doesn't work that way. It just doesn't. So people needed to look at this draft in a different perspective. This isn't free agency. It wasn't going to bring you immediate help. This is to stock the cupboards moving forward. And I think to do that, they swung, and we'll see how much they hit, but I think they did a really good job.
The Leafs denied that they, you know, preferred players that were not having their seasons interrupted by COVID, that were going to be playing through this pandemic without any, you know, interruption with, you know, the WHL and OHL not having their seasons, but I don't believe it. I think that was pretty, and as much as, you know, maybe they didn't, you know, go out and get them deliberately each time. Like, they didn't pass over someone because they thought, hey, you know, the flip the difference between these two players is that one is actually going to be playing. But they created a big board, and I think that went into it. I think they were more comfortable when creating their big board with players that weren't going to have their seasons interrupted by this COVID-19 pandemic. And that clearly, you know, painted the picture for their draft, because they went with a lot of Russians, a lot of Finnish players, and a lot of players that are playing against men and have a lot of development to do. So I think that's an easy way to sort of tie up what their agenda was at the draft. And now they look forward to free agency, which became a little bit more interesting, as you sort of alluded to, by the fact that all these qualifying offers didn't go out. And let's begin, I guess, with the Leafs' lack of qualifying offers, I guess, that they extended to the players or the restricted free agents on their roster: Freddie Gauthier, Evan Rodriguez, Jeremy Bracco, and Max Verano. I think we should, you know, we've talked about Gauthier a little bit. I think we should probably center the conversation around him, but I guess Bracco as well. Do you have any hot takes on Gauthier and Bracco? And if you want to lead with Rodriguez or Verano as well, go for it.
I have nothing to say about Verano. I mean, he's not the story here. Look, Gauthier, it was unfair of the Leafs to pick him in the first round. It was unfair for the Leafs to do what they did to him, because he was a second to third round talent, and they picked him to play a specific skill, a specific role that they should, that, you know, no one should do in their drafting strategy. And he didn't work out. The fact that he made it to the NHL is a miracle testament to Barb Underhill and also Gauthier's willingness to work. He's dealt with
Barb Underhill is going to be busy, by the way. A lot of the common knock on the guys that the Leafs actually did take in the first 2, 3, 4 rounds are guys that have trouble getting around. So Barb Underhill is going to have a work cut out for her.
But that's why you pick those guys. If they have great skill sets, but they're lacking in skating, some teams might be okay, we pass on those guys. But if you have the best at improving that skill under your employee, go for it, man. Why not?
Development is very important. It's exactly. Something that should not be overlooked.
Look, Gauthier, he's...
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's a double-edged sword that he's a teddy bear. He seems like the nicest person on the planet. I talked to him for, you know, I covered him for a season on the Marlies. He was the nicest person on the planet. Always loved to talk. He was always had a smile on his face, accepted any role that was given his way. At the same time, he was on a team that needs its lower line players to give them something in the physical realm of things. He was kind of big for nothing. Like, he was 6'5", and that earned him a spot in a Mike Babcock roster, but it just didn't work anywhere else. And look, as much as people criticize Dubas for having his guys, Gauthier seemed to be his guy. Gauthier seemed to be a Keith guy too. You know, he played under Keith all the time, and Keith kept using him and kept inserting him in lineups and inserted him in a lineup over Pierre Engvall to start a playoff series, which was a big deal. But he just didn't work out. And he didn't give the Leafs what they needed. And another team is going to think that they can, you know, get the dragon out of him, or get, you know, find the anger in Gauthier, and it's not going to work. And he'll be, you know, a decent tweener to fourth line player on another team, or perhaps he comes back and, you know, kind of plays that tweener role on the Leafs, but they're pretty up against the cap. I don't even know if they can afford to have an extra spare guy. Bracco on the other. Go for it.
I was just going to say, he could be the Marty Marincin next year, where he's basically not going to cost you anything. 14th, 15th forward, mainly with the Marlies. He can still, you know, hang out in Trinity Bellwoods and with his dog, and everything will be great.
We don't need any more Martin Marincins. He is the forward version of Martin Marincin. If he's a regular in your lineup, you've gone too far. Like it's.
But he's not, if you know, 14, 15 forward, just Marlies mostly. But there's no point in having him in the Marlies.
You have to use them. It's, yeah, and there's no point. Yeah.
There's no point in having Freddie Gauthier back. There's
exactly. Bracco, on the other hand, I hate to see wasted talent. That is my least favorite thing in the world, is wasted potential. This guy had all the potential in the world to be at least a very good player. Maybe not a star, but he is legitimately, other than Mitch Marner, the best passer in the organization. He led the AHL in assists a year ago as a 22-year-old. And yet, here we are a year later, and he's not getting a qualifying offer. This extends, this is a testament to A, how his season went this past season, which was, anything else aside, which was just a stagnancy, I guess, whatever. He was very stagnant in his ability to refine his game. He can do one thing, and that's pass the puck, specifically on the half wall, and that's about it. He can't shoot. He doesn't defend very well. He doesn't skate very well. He's got a weird skating stance, which can help in lateral movement, but that's about it. And look, I don't want to call any player's attitudes into question because, you know, we don't know what's going on. But I covered Bracco for 2 years. And the guy was a second-round pick, and the Leafs, people forget, brought him into the organization while he was still in junior. They brought him in, I think it was in the middle of the season, he had like a week off or something. They brought him in for him to see how a pro organization worked, what pro guys do. He was practicing with the team for a bit. He was traveling with the team for a bit. He was just to kind of indoctrinate him into the pro life. And that didn't rub off on him. He showed up to his first Marlies training camp severely out of shape, to the point where they essentially demoted him right away and scratched him for, I think it was seven of the team's first nine games, and scratched him a lot during that year. And then also scratched him except for two games all throughout their Calder Cup run. He didn't play a part in that Calder Cup run. And so he didn't work. And it's such a shame because he had all the tools in the world to do it. He had all the resources in the world to do it with the Leafs. I saw firsthand how much they were pumping into him and how many chances they gave him and how much of a rope they gave him and how much of a role they gave him. Sheldon Keefe, at the end of their Calder Cup run, when Bracco was celebrating but he didn't get a chance to play, he was a black ace, Keefe told him specifically, look, next year this is going to be your team. And he did, and that ended up happening. Bracco ended up finishing, I think it was second in the AHL in points and first in assists. But then you have to take another step. And especially when you're under the sort of the landfill of the Leafs' right side, you need to be able to do something. You need to be able to offer something else. And he just never was able to do that. And the combination of him kind of not working to start his career, showing up really out of shape, and that really sort of negative first impression as a professional, and then everything else that kind of culminated in that. I mean, he wasn't going to get qualified anyway, but it is just it's a shocking thing to see a guy with the tools he had, with the draft pedigree that he had, just not even get a qualifying offer on a second contract.
And a bit of a cautionary tale too. I mean, you can't apply this logic or this what happened in 2015 to what might happen in 2020. But they clearly coveted Jeremy Bracco back in 2015.
They had every reason.
They did, but they traded down and passed on a guy like Travis Konecny. I think that's where they traded out of, went and got Travis Dermott and Jeremy Bracco. Bracco's obviously not with the organization anymore, and there's concerns about what Travis Dermott is doing from a developmental standpoint. So, I mean, that shouldn't be applied to the logic of trading down and going after the guys that you mm-hmm. have coveted on your big board. But it's just something to think about, I guess, as the Leafs complete another draft and move forward with what's going to be a new look fourth line with Freddie Gauthier not there. But Evan Rodriguez won't be there either. I guess I don't think they were ever going to give him a qualifying offer because it was just too much money. But they weren't able to come to an agreement on a deal to have him out of that fourth line. I don't really know what that means. I don't think they're missing out on anything necessarily with Rodriguez. I think all it means is that they're going to turn over this fourth line significantly beyond Jason Spezza and go after some free agents here. And I think we're going to get into the free agents a little bit, but the fact that they're moving on from Gauthier, Rodriguez, Bracco, and Verono, I don't think it really means anything. I think they're going to go after more impactful players than those four who don't really have a place with either the Marlies or the Maple Leafs.
Yeah, like I'm really interested to see where guys like Bracco and Gauthier, specifically Bracco, I'm really interested to see where he lands, because they clearly the organization needed a fresh start for him. They were kind of tired of giving him leeway and not be sort of rewarded for that. But he is a skilled guy. He looks right now to be a quadruple A guy, but I'm wondering if another team who maybe is worse and can actually play him in a top six role in a pinch, maybe a Detroit or something. You know, Dmytro Timoshov was logging regular NHL minutes there last year, so who knows? Anything's possible. Can maybe give him a shot. But yeah, is it for sure that Rodriguez is not going to come back? Because yes, he, like, you know, free agency is going to open, but they've been wanting to sort of work out a deal. Maybe if he doesn't get what he wants in the open market, he can come back, and he's a local guy, right?
I mean, I guess it's possible, but I also think he's part of that sort of wave of guys who are not receiving qualifying offers that made him maybe a little less desirable, because there's just simply a lot more guys out there right now. And I think we can get into the free agency discussion a little bit now, because basically the unrestricted free agent pool is almost doubled with all these restricted free agents that aren't going to get any contracts, or at least aren't going to get contracts at the maximum value at what they would be if they had given a qualifying or they accepted a qualifying offer. So let's just open it up. Let's just open up the floor. I'll open it up to you, obviously. Who do you think the Leafs should target in free agency? No one is too unimportant or too, you know, ambitious, I'll say. Have at it.
Obviously, you know, Alex Pietrangelo would be my number one guy. A lot of people are kind of off that train now, but I still think he kind of solves all their problems. But if we're talking about, like, sort of more in the weeds, not sort of high impact guys, there are two. One, for me specifically, Troy Stetcher. I can't believe he didn't get qualified, and he is now a UFA. He can sign anywhere. And I think that guy, I'm really high on him. He's the right shooting guy. He's a puck moving guy. He's exactly the right-handed shot you kind of need in the lower, I would say the lower echelon of your blue line. Like, I don't think he can be a top four guy, at least right now, but he's young-ish. He can move the puck. He can defend. He's a little, I would say he's a step above Justin Hall, who it would help a lot if essentially Hall was on that third pairing, or potentially if Stetcher was on that third pairing and Hall and Muzzin pairing was able to, you know, stay together barring an injury. I love him. And also Vinny Hinostroja. You know, he's kind of bounced around a lot, but he's just been a solid point producer. He's got really, really good underlying numbers, and I really like him. Like, I think these are two guys you can kind of plug in on a third or fourth line, not Stetcher because he's a defenseman, but Hinostroja specifically, third or fourth
third
line.
Pair.
Looking at him lower in the lineup, that'd be great. Another one, and we don't know how much this is kind of being hinted at, and we don't know how much he's going to cost. We don't know anything, but Patrick Maroon, obviously, that'd be a great guy. But we have to remember as well, Maroon doesn't produce offensively in the regular season. Like, he's not a big point getter. And so, and at this point, he's been underpaid so much that he's obviously going to want to cash in. And I don't think the Leafs can afford to give this guy maybe what another dumber team might actually give him for the production that he brings. He's what they need from a on paper standpoint. He's a big guy. He's got winning pedigree. You know, he's still got a chip on his shoulder, so he's not unmotivated. He wants to show that he can prove that he can belong and earn this kind of contract that he hasn't been given so long, or for so long. But at the same time, he had, I think it was 23 points last year, 9 goals. And if this guy's been making $2 million and above, you just can't afford to have that guy on a third or fourth line making that much money as the team is constructed right now. So that's a bit of a shame. But yeah, there's so many guys available. Like, I'm just going down the list right now, and I am sort of, my mind is just is unraveling. Like, TJ Brody would be great, although he shoots left, he's playing the right side, and I think you can get him at a decent clip. They're just, like I said, Troy Stetcher. He's 17 points in 69 games last year, 15 minutes a night. Money in the bank there. See how much he gets. There's so many options. Tomorrow is going to be, everyone's hyping up the draft as being this, as the big event that everyone is going to be, you know, everyone's going to see the Leafs ad. No, free agency is going to be nuts. I feel like they're going to be potentially the most active team out there.
I agree with you on Troy Stetcher. It would be interesting. A Stetcher-Sandin third pair, and you're
That'd
paying
cool, right?
Stetcher the same amount as Travis Dermott would make, and he is used as a trade chip. I think that would be an easy way to sort of optimize your roster and give yourself a chance to make that big splash with the top pairing defenseman. Chris Tanev would be interesting for that. I do think he's a guy who could be a serious upgrade on Ron Hainsey, but do the Ron Hainsey things for Morgan Riley, being that guy. Obviously, he had some success with Quinn Hughes. So I think ultimately Tanev would be too expensive, but Stetcher
can definitely
be an option and injury prone. I like Hinostroza as well, but my guy is Thomas Nosek.
Yes, I saw you tweet him right before we started recording. Okay,
he's my guy. I mean, that fourth line for the Vegas Golden Knights, very, very effective. Can control the run of play, have an impact. And it's Ryan Reeves gets all the attention, but it's not all Ryan Reeves. It's a lot of William Carrier, and it's a lot of Thomas Nosek when he's in the lineup. He wasn't a mainstay for them, and that's why I think he might be gettable and not for a crazy price. But I think he's a guy who could give that sort of crash element to the fourth line and still be a positive influence in terms of the run and play, and being a guy who can actually chip in offensively. I think he could maybe get on the end of some Jason Spezza rushes and provide a little bit of offense as well for a cheap price. They're going to have to find guys that are cheap, and I think if you could get him for $1 million, he'd be a good add and a serious upgrade on Freddie Gauthier, obviously being the guy who could actually use his body and be physical. I think Drake Caggiula might be worth looking at for the fourth line. There are other guys like Corey Perry and Michael Grabner who are going to cost a little bit more, but maybe are worth looking at. Matt Nieto might be worth looking at. And Radko Gudas, I mean, we've been talking about him for a while, maybe not you and me specifically, Leaf fans have been talking about Radko Gudas, and I think he could be a guy if he can't be Riley's partner, but maybe he could be, playing in that Stetcher role that we outlined earlier as the third pairing on the right side. Those are the guys that, captured my attention when I went through the list today.
Yeah, I don't even consider Gudas as a free agent anymore. I consider him a Leaf because everything that we've heard is exactly what he wants. And I feel like, when NBA free agency opens and you just know that Woj has essentially scheduled all these signings to be official. And so he tweets like 27 times in 30 seconds. And you're like, how is this possible? That's going to be one of Elliot Friedman or Darren Dreger, whoever is breaking, like, all right, the Leafs assigned Radko Gudas to a 2-year, whatever, million-dollar contract, maybe $3 million, I don't know. He's a good – I think he's exactly what they need in their lower depths. He can't be playing in your top four, though, so at this point in his career. So we'll see. But one guy who just became a UFA, I think it was yesterday even, that I totally skipped out on because he is now the apple of my eye, is Dominic Cahoon, 24-year-old guy. He's a center, but he also can play both wings. The guy scored 31 points in 56 games last year, despite only averaging 13-17 in ice time. You need to sort of, and how much money is this guy really going to get on the open market? He wasn't qualified. And I think due to the glut of people available, I think that, that might bring his asking price down. He's a guy who would never be hitting the open market if it wasn't for, the flat cap and the lack of growth and the pandemic and everything. I think you need to strike where that iron's hot. Look, if they are going to trade Kerfoot, maybe he could be a worthwhile replacement, or having him as a fourth line center potentially, depending on what he makes, would be great. A lot of these guys, though, we're looking at a lot of the old guys. Like I would say Joe Thornton as a fourth line center, but again, I would be on that train, but he has to take maybe a hair above Spezza, like a $1 million contract to potentially win a cup. And I don't know if he would take it. One thing, though, I know I'm kind of rambling here because there's so many options, but one thing here I want to ask you about. What about Kyle Turris? What would you do with him?
Interesting. I actually had someone message me saying they think at 1.5 he could be the third line center, then you could move on from Alex Kerfoot, obviously, or shift him to the wing.
He's only
three. I don't see it personally. I don't see it. I mean, I'm always worried about guys that are just taking that steep fall off the cliff with their careers, so it would be someone that I wouldn't have any confidence in, but it might be someone who could give you immense value on 1.5 million if he's in the right scenario. I just don't have enough of a read on him to confidently say that he should be the guy that they go out and get.
Look, it's funny because they're both next to each other on the and they produced at one point less in relatively similar circumstances, and they're both next to each other on the cap friendly free agency board here. But let's take a look, like Derek Brassard last year, it looked like his career was going the Kyle Turris route. He was on three teams in one season. He couldn't stick anywhere. It looked like he was hopeless. And then the Islanders signed him to a bargain bin contract, and he ended up producing pretty well. And he ended up, his season last year that everyone said was pretty well, was actually under the points per game of Kyle Turris. He had 32 points in 66 games. Turris last year, in a down year that got him bought out, he had 31 points in 62 games. So if Turris does want to accept a $1.5 million contract, or maybe even a one-year $2 million, depending on what you can do, and he can give you equivalent value to equivalent or even a little bit better than Alexander Kerfoot, then you've already made the team better right there. And yes, you know, people are saying he might not exactly give the Leafs what they want, but we've seen, like, I know you're wary on guys who are steep, you're having these steep kind of falls downwards, but how much of Turris's decline was kind of skewed by his cap number? Because he had just signed that big contract extension and he was making big money on a Nashville team that needed him to score. But the Leafs might not need him to score as much as Nashville did. They're not signing him to be a top-of-the-line player. And if he can replicate 31 points in 62 games as a third-line center at a $1.5 million or $2 million clip, would that not be perfect value, essentially, for what they need?
I'm just skeptical.
All right.
Just skeptical. I mean, I don't have really much to add, but I do want to mention that I'm out on I think it does fall in this category. I'm out on Turris. I'm out on Thornton, and I'm out on Maroon.
Wow.
I think Maroon. Not
everyone I brought to the table. Okay, sounds good.
I'm out on Maroon because the magic has to wear off at some point, right? Like, how motivated is he going to be after another long year, a long summer, to come back and have that same impact for the Maple Leafs? And he's definitely wants to make money this time around. I just feel like that combination, I don't think they're going to extract the most value from it. Getting Spezza, I kind of think that leaves Joe Thornton.
That's kind of
makes him a little bit redundant. I'm not sure where he fits. And I just think you need more utility with that fourth line. You've chosen to have one skill guy on there. He's got to be surrounded with some guys that give you a little bit of extra, make you hard to play against. That's what Kyle Dubas has been talking about. You're going to become a team that's much harder to play against. Jason Spezza is not a hard player to play against. Joe Thornton is not a hard player to play against anymore. He was when he was picking up 75 assists per season, but he's not doing that anymore. So I just feel like they need a little bit – they need some different elements, and I think Kyle Turris just is going to do a lot of what Alex Kerfoot could do or does do.
At a lower clip.
Sure, if you exchange them, maybe, but I just don't have the confidence anymore that Kyle Turris is that guy.
But if – Not to kind of sway your mind here, because I don't think I'm going to be able to.
No, but you can. You can.
Let's say we're thinking in kind of binary sense here. Like, let's say Kyle Turris, he replicates that season, 31 points in 62 games last year. At let's be a little generous, $2 million, 1 year, $2 million. That gives you the opportunity to trade Kerfoot, and we're not even factoring in the return that a Kerfoot package or Kerfoot himself could get, because not only are you kind of replicating that value or that production at a lower cap hit, but you're also then reaping the rewards of what he can bring you, potentially another lower depth piece or another prospect or a pick or something. I'm talking myself in more into the Kyle Turris scenario here.
I do see the value in that, because the Leafs, we're talking about free agency, and the Leafs cannot flex their financial muscle in the free agent market. Yes, they can go out and pay for players. They can overpay for players, but that's not going to help them. So if you can get a guy like Turris who can do the same job, if he can do the same job as Alex Kerfoot, yes, you make that move. Are you going to find a trade partner for Alex Kerfoot? Probably. I think you probably could. You might not get a huge return, but you can probably find a way to do that. So if they can, if that's a way that they can save some money, then you can go for it. You got to go for it, because they have to find every avenue to do so. But I think with free agency, they've got to go after guys that are going to be undervalued. And
I think
Turris does fit that mold, but I'm just not convinced he's the best way to spend the money in free agency. But we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, they have to bank on a lot of these older over the hill guys, maybe name brand guys, wanting to come to Toronto to win, and maybe taking the entirety of their contract and bonus up front and signing for, you know, kind of league min deals. They have to, or undervalued. They have to kind of bank on that. And that's where a guy like a Joe Thornton would come into the fold, or, you know, somewhere like that, because you're not going to be able to go out and spend, you know, ticket price on these guys. You're not gonna be able to go out and, you know, in a normal year, like I'm looking at like Andreas Anastasiou, for example, you're not gonna be able to get a guy like that, because he's going to want, you know, somewhere around the $3 million that he would have gotten.
He's gonna try to max out.
Exactly. But a guy like Joe Thornton, or even a guy like Patrick Maroon, or even a guy like Wayne Simmonds, for example, like we didn't even bring him up because, you know, I don't know how much he has left in the tank. But Wayne Simmonds at $1 million, for going back to Leafs, he's exactly what you want on your fourth line. Patrick Maroon at $1 million, he's what you want on your fourth line. But at the same time, are they going to take those? Because you have to kind of bank on them selling the security of Toronto and the stability of Toronto as a city and as an organization over maybe going to, you know, Florida, for example, and getting $1.5 million over your listed price. So
yeah,
they really have to sell the organization. But one thing, real quick, is that I think that the bubble situation of all the teams playing in the Leafs building and being in their locker rooms for months and seeing firsthand the resources that they have around, the amenities they have around, I think that might do something to how their recruitment. Because think about it, the Leafs have always been known for having top of the line stuff. But a lot of these guys who played in the playoffs, they know what the city is like now, because they've been here they were there for 2 months or a month and a half or something. And also they saw essentially what it was like to be a Leaf. They saw what it was like to be in that locker room. They saw what it was like to have those amenities, have those resources, everything around them, and they also got to see how those players were treated in the bubble, which might happen again. I think that did a bit of a sell job in showing just how top-notch this organization is and what a benefit it would be to potentially being a Leaf. I think that adds some value, and that might shave off, you know, half a mil in some of these negotiations, something like that.
Perhaps it might. I mean, Simmonds and Thornton, certainly they are better headlines, but I take the 13th forward, the Vegas Golden Knights, over either. Okay.
You're like Dubas. You have your guys. And,
I have a guy.
Yeah. One of them's
It's going to be fascinating, whatever happens. I mean, because they got to do a lot. There's a lot out there. There's, you know, this is, you know, we just got off an unprecedented hockey summer. Mm-hmm. Now we have this unprecedented free agent season. Let's go into the quick headlines that we have. We got to be quick with these before we wrap up the show. There were a couple trades, obviously, in and around the draft. Max Domi, Matt Murray, and Elias Anderson all going to different organizations. Obviously, Josh Anderson being the return in the Max Domi deal. What do you think about that swap between Montreal and Columbus?
What is Montreal thinking? Like, Josh Anderson, yes, he's crash and bang and can provide, you know, some offense when he's healthy, but he hasn't played since December. And even with that 5 or 6 month layoff that you had in between the pause and the return to play, he still wasn't healthy enough to come back for the playoffs. He's coming off a one goal season. How is that worth Max Domi, who's, I would say, I was expecting it to be a 1-for-1 swap. And even then I would be like, that's a bit steep. Like, you know, Max Domi's got that name brand. He's, you know, everyone kind of thinks he's a better player than he really is. But then Montreal added that third rounder in there as well. They overpaid for essentially a comparable guy who, yeah, when healthy, can make you mean and make you tough, maybe chip in, you know, the 27 goals that he did before. But he's a physical guy who's coming off a devastating shoulder injury. How much is that going to change his game? I don't think that's great. And Domi, he signs a 2-year extension worth $10.6 million. Whatever, man. It's 2 years. They clearly... It walks him right to UFA, but they clearly didn't want to, like, you know, bank on him too hard. A lot of this seemed to be linked between the degradation of relationship between Domi and Claude Julien. So maybe that was fueling this. I don't know. Either way, I think this is definitely a loss for Montreal.
It certainly did fuel it, but I kind of love the deal for Montreal. I'm a big Josh Anderson fan. I'm a huge Josh Anderson fan. If we give credit to the Maple Leafs for knowing who they are, we have to give credit to the Montreal Canadiens and their newfound approach.
For knowing who they want to be,
which is just to be miserable to play. Like, their defense, it's, you know, it's flawed in some ways for sure. I mean, they got some serious talent back there, but they are doing things only one way, and that leaves you open for some, you know, accepting and presenting some limitations. But Josh Anderson, I think, is going to fit that team beautifully. I think he's going to be a guy who gives them that extra punch they need from the wings. They're building a really strong center base. They need some more punch. They are going to be a miserable team to play in the playoffs if they get there. That is a big if, but they're going to be a really tough team to score on. It's going to be a really tough team to play night in and night out. And I like that they've embraced this new style, which is to just be someone or a team that is trying to pummel everyone into submission. Josh Anderson fits that for me. And I just don't think Max Domi had much of a future there.
Yeah, you know, Josh Anderson's one goal is really going to fit well into Montreal's vaunted attack. They needed offense, and they added a guy.
What, in 27 the year before? I mean, injuries happen. Injuries happen.
But he wasn't
playing through injuries.
Okay, cool. I'm giving
the benefit of the doubt.
Maybe there will be egg on my face.
30 goals. Yes. I don't think he's going to score 30 goals for them, and he probably will not match Domi's production. But Domi's going to be in a way better situation. Domi was playing on the fourth line for Montreal. Obviously, Anderson's going to probably be playing on the third line. He might get some second line duty. Actually, he probably will be playing in the middle six, whether it's second or third line. He's going to be playing with some good players. And if he's healthy, I think he's an X factor. He's a unicorn in this league. He's a different player. Not many players can do what Josh Anderson does. A lot of players can do what Max Domi does when he's limited the way he is. He's limited the way he is, though. They were never going to – like, they have too many top six guys now. Max Domi had just worn out his welcome. I think they got a real difference maker potentially in Anderson.
Look, if Domi, we're looking at this as winger for winger. If Domi ends up being a center long-term like they tried before, then this is even more of a loss in my eyes. Like, this is a guy, if we're going to judge based off of production from not this year, but the year before, didn't Domi put up like a 70-point season that year? And if he can play center and produce decently, like, what are you doing?
It was clearly, just, it wasn't going to happen anymore. I don't think. I just feel like
the relationship that degraded.
Yeah, that's what happened.
I can't believe I had a bat for Max Domi there. I never want to do that again.
Well, we've chosen our sides on this one. I think we'll probably be in the same side for Matt Murray being a good deal for the Ottawa Senators. I mean,
absolutely.
They had 4 second round picks. They gave up one to get a guy who's one season removed from a rock solid 5-year start to his career. Obviously he got outperformed by Tristan Jarry this past season, but I have confidence that he can bounce back. And if you're the Ottawa Senators, you trade a second round pick, especially when you have 4, for a guy who has 2 Stanley Cups to start his career and can be a plus goaltender. I mean, it basically demonstrates how cool a commodity starting goaltending is right now for a second round pick to get a guy of Murray's caliber. But I think this is you cannot argue with this move for Ottawa because they went out and got a really capable goaltender for a low price. And now they have the ability to negotiate with him. Does it mean they're going to, you know, hit a home run with the contract they signed with Murray? If they do sign a contract with Murray, perhaps not. But I love this move for the Senators, who obviously need someone back there.
Yeah, this is a huge move for the Senators. They got a 26-year-old 2-time Stanley Cup winner to add to a team that is now all filled with young players. So yeah, like that's great. That's exactly who you want in that position. I wrote about that earlier this week. And I also have a piece coming out about the absolute unprecedentedly terrible streak that Jim Rutherford's on of stinkers, because I don't care, you know, what the market is for goaltenders. You need to get more than this for a 2-time Stanley Cup winner who won both those Stanley Cups before he even lost his, or I think he won one of those Stanley Cups before he even lost his Calder eligibility. Yeah, he got outplayed last year, but I think he was dealing with like a family matter or something during the season before too. Look, he's a very solid piece to add to an Ottawa Senators team like this, and to only get, you know, a middle of the second round pick and then a prospect, and then apparently the head coach of the Oakland Raiders, but also in Jonathan Gruden, but or not Oakland, they're Las Vegas now, but to get sort of like a middling prospect, that's insane. This guy brought you 2 cups, and yeah, it doesn't matter what the market's going to be to deal him out. Now, at the same time, this has happened to the Leafs before, where they go and they get an RFA goalie without negotiating a contract first, and it's burned them. It burned them with Toskal, and it burned them with Bernier. And right now, Matt Murray could essentially ask for the world. And the Ottawa Senators, they probably have to give it to him. The goaltending market makes it a bit different because they could just be, all right, well, we don't really give up anything of consequence, so just walk and we'll get a cheap guy. We'll get, you know, Anton Khudobin for the next 2 years and then reevaluate where we are moving forward. But I think he's a great pillar, and I cannot believe that they got him again. Like, the lack of value that Jim Rutherford has managed to milk his even lack of assets that he had, the minimal assets that he had, just how little he's been able to milk from those little value he's been able to milk from those assets is staggering. A swing and a miss.
Last one, and I think our producer will appreciate that. I don't have much to add because we've run on pretty long. Is Elias Anderson to LA for a second round pick. Obviously, this is a top draft selection of the New York Rangers, who they are cutting bait with. But when you're a team like the Rangers, who had so much fortune, an abundance of fortune, fall into your lap recently, you can decide to make, cut bait on a mistake and move forward. They had a great draft. And it doesn't diminish anything that they gave up a top pick of a recent past for just a second rounder. The Rangers obviously rebuilding in a brilliant fashion. And now LA has another guy to add to their prospect system, which is just unbelievably deep right now. Mm-hmm. So we'll see what happens with that one, but I don't have really much to add.
Yeah, I think it's the perfect, move for both teams. You know, Lace Anderson was never going to fit in New York, even though he was seventh overall or something. He was a top 10 pick.
Top 10, yeah.
There was never going to be a future with him in New York. And he fits the LA Kings timeline perfectly because they didn't really need a second round pick at this point. You know, they are building for the future. They already have a great prospect pipeline. So that second round pick, you know, maybe he hits and he comes into the league, what, like 5 years from now?
They had a ton of draft selections. So
exactly.
They're good.
They're bringing in a guy who might just need a change of scenery, who was good enough to be drafted top 10 at one point, and he's able to kind of step in right now. Like it's sort of accelerated. Even if he met, like, I think it's the perfect move for kind of both teams. The Rangers add some future value for a guy they were never going to use. The Kings add some present value, I guess, for a pick that they were going to use and they might not ever see. So it works out great for both sides. And I think it's a great landing spot for Anderson because he might actually get like a top six role in this organization.
Two teams to watch out for, LA and the New York Rangers, building some significant momentum forward right now. Obviously, that's easy for a team like LA who's mm-hmm. hit the bottom, but the Rangers obviously with Lafreniere and I guess they got one of the defensemen that many people thought the Leafs should take in Braden Schneider in the system as well. Lafreniere, we're sure is going to have a positive impact, maybe not Braden Schneider, but it was good to talk Leafs hockey with you again, Mike. It was a few months because we shifted gears to the Stanley Cup final and the Lightning and Dallas Stars put on a great show. But we know where our bread is buttered, and that's with the Toronto Maple Leafs. So we're going to have lots to talk about with the Maple Leafs as they embark on free agency, the draft in the rearview mirror. I can't wait.
Bye.